shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free.
The Herald of Truth broadcast is on the air, a program of spirit and truth dedicated to teaching the way of God more perfectly. These broadcasts contain keys to help unlock knowledge and reveal hidden truths of the Bible in these last days. Christians called to a higher level of understanding will be given Bible-based solutions to their personal as well as national problems. They will want to find out more about their part in God's plan. Our mailing address is Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas, 72602, and will be given again at the end of this broadcast.
Good evening. This is Brother Mike of Kingdom Identity Ministries, welcoming you to another one of our first of the month live Kingdom Concepts broadcasts. We're being heard tonight over radio station WWCR shortwave on 4.840 megahertz. That's transmitter 3, and 3.215 megahertz. That's transmitter 1, and also shortwave radio station WBCQ 7.490 megahertz. Both of those stations have a link where you can hear the program on the internet, or you can go to our radio page at kingidentity.com, KINGIDENTITY.com. Go to the radio page and you'll see a link for our Kingdom Concepts program there. You'll also see a toll-free number that you can call if you'd like to participate in tonight's program. That's 877-924-7722. You can remember that by 877-YAHS-RACE, 877-924-7722. Tonight, we will be discussing a subject of interest to most people, all about money. What is biblical money? What are the true priorities we should seek first in our lives? What should we do to prosper? How should we prepare for times of financial crisis? To help answer these questions and more, my guest is a dedicated identity minister, a financial advisor, and a trustee of this ministry. I'd like to welcome back to the broadcast Pastor Bob Jones. Hello, Bob. He was there a minute ago. I guess he dropped off the line somehow. There he is back. Hi, Bob. You dropped off for a minute. Hello, Bob?
Yes.
Okay. I just introduced you and you dropped off for a minute. So you're on the air.
Thank you. I was having some phone difficulty here.
I might start by saying that in the Bible, gold, silver, and brass or copper are generally the money, the minute coins that were used at that time, especially silver, and that throughout history, other substances such as salt and other things have been used as money. But now we have a credit system using unbacked Federal Reserve notes. What is real money and real wealth?
Well, real money and real wealth, as Yahweh says, is the land, the gold, the silver, the crops, the cattle, oil, and he meant olive oil back then. And in other words, hard assets or real assets, something with substance and so forth. And so, you know, these days you could include oil, regular motor oil and so forth. It's called anabolic oil, not fossil fuel. That's a big lie. Jerome Corsi, he wrote a great book on that. And he said even the Nazis, they would, in World War II, they would drill down 5,000-6,000 feet. They'd hit oil. They'd pump it out to use for their machines and so forth. And when the oil would well would run dry, they'd cap it. And then they'd come back a year later and uncap it, and the well would be full again. And the reason for that is the oil comes from the center of the earth. Great book for anybody to read, Jerome Corsi, great writer. And so all that, it comes from dinosaurs and fossil fuel plants 75 million years ago. That's a lie that the oil companies tell so that they can raise prices on oil. My father, when he was a young man, he said you would pull into a filling station and to get oil, and because all of them burned a little oil back then. And he said then when they come to pump the gasoline in the car, they'd say, you know, pay what you want. There was no price on the gasoline. And so you could put a nickel up there or a penny or pay nothing because it was a waste byproduct of oil processing.
So this is a big subject, the subject of money. Incidentally, we do have a caller, if you'd like to take a caller who just called in, from Milton, Massachusetts. You're on the air.
Okay. Hello.
Hello. From Milton, Massachusetts, Mr. Boyles.
Oh, hi there. Hello.
How are you?
Yeah, I was on. I didn't realize I was being seen from Milton, Massachusetts. I used to live there, but that's been years ago. Interesting. But anyways, yeah. I've listened to a lot of your this is not pertaining to the topic at hand, but since you identified me, I'll just very quickly say this. I don't want to take up your time that you've put toward the topic itself, but yeah, I've listened to a number of your archive broadcasts and several times I was going to listen, hook up with you on Sunday nights, either if something was going on or I forgot, but tonight I left a big note all over the house so I would definitely remember to tune in. And I'm really glad I did. Good to be here. I just very quickly, if you have time, as time progresses tonight, I live in West Virginia now. I used to live in Massachusetts. And I'm wondering if maybe you would be able to refer any sort of congregations or fellowships in this area or that type of thing. I feel a strong connection to the word as you deliver it. But I don't know where else to go in my particular area. But, so I just wanted to put that out there. Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you. Do you know anybody in that area, Bob?
Not in West Virginia, I'm sorry to say. I'm out here in Las Vegas, Nevada, and I'm mostly on the West Coast, really? So I don't really know anybody in West Virginia. Certainly Kingdom Identity Ministries, they're in Harrison, Arkansas, Mike's ministry, and that would be the closest one that I'm aware of.
Uh-huh.
But what I recommend to people is that much like homeschooling, which is fairly popular among patriots nowadays, that you do home churching, and you and your family or neighbors or something like that can have a small house church that is much like the original biblical churches, and that you can perhaps teach a lesson, a Bible study, and you can use our material or just do your own study from the Bible and maybe use something like our Sunday sermons or something else and get a little congregation going, because like a friend of mine told me once, we're the salt of the earth, and you don't put all your salt in one place, you sprinkle it around. So our people are the small remnant, and we're spread around.
Where would one find your Sunday sermons, Brother Mike?
Well, they're on our radio archives. Every one of them's posted on our website, kingidentity.com. And you can also get them on CD if you wish.
Okay.
And then we have a list of Compre and Swift tapes and some by others.
Okay. All right. I used to, they're down. I guess they discontinued their blogs and podcasts about a year ago, but there's a, they used to be a website called Faith and Heritage, and I, they're not terribly, if they're unlike you at all, they wouldn't be terribly unlike you. I used to really like that. Hated when it went under. So, but I like your idea of the Sunday sermons and yeah, going back to the whole house search kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, and if you encourage somebody to do a Bible study or yourself, it helps you understand the word and also gives you ability to teach others.
Yeah, I think I might be able to gather up some folks here in West Virginia to do that. Right now there's nothing, and so yeah, that would be a worthy attempt.
Well, I thank you for calling.
I'll just stay on and listen to what the rest of the program, if that's okay.
Yeah, that's fine. I'll have to put you on mute so it doesn't interfere, but you're welcome to stay on the line and listen.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you again.
So anyway, I should probably give some of my credentials out. What makes me, as it were, an expert in finance and so forth, I grew up in Las Vegas, and 8 years I was a dealer and pit boss and eye in the sky, and so I learned all about the gambling business for sure. And then I left that, went into real estate. I'm actually a broker in 3 states. And so I've been doing real estate since 1978. Also, I'm an insurance broker for primarily life and annuities. I don't sell any other type of insurance. That's your investment grade type insurance. And then I was a Series 7 stock broker with Dean Witter for many years, and a registered investment advisor, Series 65. And also a commodity broker for a Series 3. And so I've spent most of my time in that area. I've also done commercial real estate financing and some residential. I've sold real estate and bought real estate out of the country in other countries, Mexico, the Philippines, Japan, and Holland, and so forth. So I've been doing all this stuff for over 40 years now, over 50 years actually. And so I've been doing this for a long time. Anyway, just to get back, when it comes to finance and things, there's two types of assets, only two. There's hard assets, which are the real assets, substance, and so forth. And that's what Yahweh commands in the scripture. The land, the gold, the silver, the crops, the cattle, oil, and so forth. These days you can include other things like guns and ammo, gems. Real gems are sapphires, emeralds, and rubies. Those are your three precious ones. Diamonds are not precious. Another lie that the Jew has told us down through the last 100 years or so. And it's mainly been sold as advertisement to women. Diamonds are a girl's best friend. Diamonds are forever and so forth. But I did for a short time used to buy diamonds in Holland and sell them in Japan. And so I learned quite a lot about it. And I used to, a girl I was dating, her cousin was a cutter over in Holland. And he told me the real deal, that if they ever released all the diamonds that there are, you could buy diamonds for the price of a dozen roses. They're not precious at all. They look nice. They have a 10 hardness on the scale, so they can cut anything that's out there. But as far as being a rare jewel or anything like that, they're not. What women used to get prior to the diamond push in the 20s and 30s with the marketing with the De Beers family, is they used to get sapphires for the wedding ring and so forth. But in the scripture, it doesn't really get into, you know, different types of gems price-wise and what's more precious and so forth, with a few mentions. Like rubies, if you can find a woman that's faithful to you and a helpmate like she's supposed to be, her price is far above rubies. So you have passages like that. Of course, the breastplate of the priesthood, they had 12 gems in there. but diamonds are not precious. They wouldn't even be ranked hardly at all, except for they're so plentiful around. There's mainly four places that people put their money. Regular banks called commercial banks, like Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Chase, Citi. Those are the big four. But when you put your money in there, your so-called money, which is not really money, it's fiat currency, and it flows like a current of a river. But it's not backed by nothing, and it's worthless. And that takes us over into the paper assets, or the financial assets, as they like to be called. But if you took all the paper assets, all the derivatives that there are, and a derivative is anything that's derived from something, like orange juice is derived from oranges. A mortgage is derived from a house, the loan on the house, and so forth. Options are derivatives on stocks and bonds and mutual funds and so forth. So you have all these different paper assets. But if you actually took all the paper assets and you put them in a basket and you said, what's the total of all the paper assets in the world? The answer is nothing. That's correct. The answer is nothing. And the reason it's worth nothing is because they don't have any intrinsic value in themselves. They're all based on something else. So, those are the two assets that are hard assets, paper assets, and paper assets are called financial assets. I like to call it the paper money gimmick game because it was primarily developed by the Jews, and it was designed to give you a piece of paper and steal your hard asset away. That's why they gave you a mortgage, so that you pay debt to them. Of course, back then you had real gold and silver, which was circulating as money. But and then if you defaulted and you didn't pay your debt, they'd come with that piece of paper and they'd foreclose on your property and take your property. And that's how our people started losing their property all over the place, because Yahweh said you're never to sell the land and you're not to mortgage the land or any of that. That's just not what you do. You have your land. You should have it free and clear. But you really don't these days in most states. Texas is the only state that has what's called a lodeal title. The rest of the states have what's called fee simple, whether it's sole proprietorship or tenants in common or joint tenants or whatever. You don't own it, and that's why you have to pay property tax on it. But if you have, like in Texas, you have no debt on your property, no mortgage, you can go down to the county. You can record a lodeal title on that, pay the taxes on that property one time for just that one year, and then never pay property tax again. And then when you pass away, your children can come and they can declare a lodeal title on that. And then, they pay the taxes for the one year, and then they own it free and clear. And there's no mortgage on it. Nobody can put a lien on it and take your property away or anything like that. So there's a whole lot of things that is never taught at all, in the financial world as it is. And they got most people convinced to, take your money and put it in stocks, bonds, or mutual funds, like that, in a 401k, a 403b, or an IRA. Well, a 401k, the guy who invented that was a guy named Ted Bina. And that was back in the early, I think it was 74, when he came up with that, when Nixon, got rid of the pensions, as it were, that they were phasing out. And all the corporations wanted the people to now take part of their money and pay for their own retirement plan, except 401k is a hoax, and it's a ticking tax time bomb. And let me give you a perfect example of that versus a Roth product. Let's say you put $5,000 a year You can put a little more in there, but just for simplicity's sake, so people can understand the math. Let's say you put $5,000 a year in your 401k. You didn't pay any tax on it. Let's say you did that for 20 years. So now you've put $100,000 in there. And let's say you got lucky and it grew to $1,000,000. Well, you think you have $1,000,000 in your 401k. You don't, because you're going to have to pay tax at the highest possible rate there is, ordinary income. And just right now, if you were to start taking that money out, you'd have $700,000, because $300,000, that 30% tax bracket you're in, you'd pay that $300,000 on that million. Now, stop and think. You only put $100,000 in, and you're paying $300,000 in taxes. And that's if you got lucky and it went from $100,000 to $1,000,000 over a 20-year period. Now, if you did it with a Roth, well, you put $5,000 in a Roth 401k and did that for 20 years, you're going to pay the tax going in. So let's say on that $100,000 you put in, $30,000 additional, you're going to pay in tax to the IRS. But now if that grows to $1,000,000, that whole $1,000,000 is totally tax free. So would you rather pay $30,000 in tax as you go along for that 20 years, or would you rather pay $300,000 at the end? That's the big difference between a 401k and a Roth. Ed Slott, who is the top CPA in the country for 401ks, 403bs, which is for charities and the public servants, you know, police, firemen, and so forth, and then IRAs, he calls those things a ticking tax time bomb, because there's no way out of it. And you could wind up paying more in taxes, depending on how high your tax bracket is and if it was left to an estate. There's a story he tells, and you can look him up on YouTube. There's a story he tells where a guy, he had $10 million in his IRA, was real lucky and so forth, had one son, and he thought that, you know, when he dies, the kid will get the IRA and so forth. Well, when it came, he was in one of the worst states, you can imagine which one that is, one of these communist states back east. But anyway, when it came to the estate tax and the income tax and everything, not only did they take that out, but it compounded over time, and they took the whole $10 million and sent the kid a bill for $2 million. That the kid owed $2 million on the IRA. And so he didn't get anything. Now he got a lawyer and he went to court, and the judge was just appalled, and he told the IRS, I don't care what the tax laws. He says, you know, you cheated the kid out of his whole $10 million inheritance. He gets nothing, but you can't chase him for $2 million more. That's just out of line. And so the judge ruled that he didn't have to pay that additional $2 million. But this is the game that's played, the paper money gimmick game. And I tell people, you know, the only reason to ever have anything in paper is if you get a tax benefit from it, like a cash value life insurance policy, if it's done correctly. Dave Ramsey, who's, I'm sure he's a good Christian guy and so forth, but he tells people to put 15% of your money in a mutual fund in four different categories and so forth. Doesn't even tell them about the Roth hardly at all. He mentions it once in a while, but it tells them to put their money in that. Well, first off, the fees that are generated over that long period, they might tell you, oh, we only charge 1%. Most mutual funds charge 1-3%, but they say, oh, we only charge 1%. Well, but over 20 years, they've taken 1% out. That's over 20% of your money they've taken. But the average person, when he starts off with his 401k, in his 20s and he gets to 65, let's say he's supposed to have $1 million in there, he only has $500,000, and that's if the market went well, because they've taken out that much in fees. The old inside joke in the stock brokerage business, which is one reason why I got out and I don't play that game, is the house made money, the broker made money, 2 out of 3 ain't dead. And that's what it is. Now, it's a gambling game besides. So they're going to take their fees out whether the market goes up or down. But when you get ready to take your money out, where's the market going to be? You don't know, and nobody else does either. In 1929, when they had the market collapsed, it lost 90% of all its value, 90%. And it took 20 years for it to get back to even. So by 1950, it got back to even to where it was in 1929 before it collapsed. Well, if you're retiring in 1929 there and you're dependent on that money and all of a sudden you lose 90% of your money, what are you going to do? You're going to go back to work? Going to go live with relatives or something? So that's not a place to put your money for retirement or anything like that. And it's all a big, giant word game. And stop and think, if it works so well, how come everybody doesn't retire rich? Because most everybody has a 401k or 403b or an IRA or combination of those things. How come they're all not retiring rich?
Well, I don't know, but most people I know don't have money to invest, and I think part of it's their spending habits more than their income. And Christ said, where your treasure is, there is your heart also. And I think that they do not know what to put first. It says, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. And it also tells you that Yahweh thy God, this is over in Deuteronomy 8:18, it is he that giveth thee the power to get wealth. So I think people's priorities are wrong, and they're putting the things of the world before the things of God, the things of Yahweh.
And you're correct. This is a problem with people. You know, they go to school, and they if they get out of college, you know, they might have got a decent profession, maybe a doctor, lawyer, engineer, or something. And that's good. But, you know, most people don't graduate high school, much less go to college. And the colleges, how the government has it fixed, if you take out a student loan, there's no way to get out of that. You have to pay it. You can't bankrupt out of it, just like you can't bankrupt out of alimony and child support. Those are three things that you just can't get rid of. You're going to have to pay it no matter what, whether the markets are up or down or whatever. So, you know, the old saying, 90% of everybody who became a millionaire, they made it in real estate. Now, I've heard skeptics and stuff say, well, it's only 70%. Well, regardless which number you use, and I believe it's the 90%, but even at 70%, every other profession is in the other 30%. So if you do want to have some wealth, what you want to do is you want to invest in real estate for the long term and so forth. And ideally you buy your properties for cash and you get a good deal, and there's ways to get them to where you can they're very affordable. But most people, they go for the mortgage and run down to their bank and get a 30-year, 15-year, 20-year mortgage or whatever. That's not what the rich people do. If you want to, another thing, if you want to be rich, you have to have the habits that the rich people have. And what they do is they don't take out a mortgage on their house. They take out what's called an equity line of credit. And so, for instance, on an equity line of credit, it's a bank product. It's not a Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac product. And what you do is you take your whole paycheck and everything and you put it in that account. That's the equity line of credit. Everything you put in there, because what that does is reduce your overall daily balance. And that's the key of how to get that mortgage paid off quick. Now, once it's in there and you've reduced it down, now you can pay the power bill and the car payment and the food and gas and so forth out of the equity line of credit account. But you don't have a mortgage. And so with that, most people wind up, how the math works out is they pay the house off in 5 to 7 years. And Yahweh is okay because you're not supposed to have any kind of loan that's over 7 years. And in fact, the lender is supposed to forgive the debt. Of course, you'll never see a lender forgive a debt these days. But at any rate, if you pay your mortgage off, or excuse me, you pay your payment off on the house in 5 to 7 years with an equity line of credit, now you still have use of all that equity in there. You don't have to go down if you see a hot deal or something on another property, or that you can buy something for pennies on the dollar. You have that equity line of credit to use. Whereas a mortgage, when you send that payment in, you don't have any use of it anymore. It's gone. And the bank keeps it, both principal and interest. And then also, you're subject, if you don't make those payments on time with the mortgage, you're subject to foreclosure. And, you know, most people thought in 2008 and 2009, with the mortgage collapse, that there was 10 million to 12 million foreclosures in America. The real number was 60 million, but you'll never hear that. And the reason I know that is because I look at different numbers and follow charts and so forth. But you've all probably heard of the banks had a lot of houses that people weren't paying, but the bank wasn't foreclosing either. And the people lived in the house for 6 months or a year or even 2 years and didn't make a payment, and the bank didn't foreclose. And the reason is because as long as they didn't foreclose, it remained in the black on their books, and it wasn't shifted to the red to where they had to foreclose on it. And so many of the banks went out of business. The FDIC was closing 2 to 7 banks a week with no end in sight, but they should have been closing quite a lot more of that, like about 6-7 times that many. But the banks weren't foreclosing on the houses. So the banks play the game. Ideally, Yahweh says, "Oh, no man anything, have no debt ever," and that's the best way to be. But for most people these days here in America, how it's designed, if they did that, they'd never be able to afford a house. They got to come, you know, with a down payment and make payments. But how can you make a promise that you're going to make that payment for the next 30 years? Who knows what's going to happen in the next 30 years?
But usury is strictly unscriptural. We're told that you're not supposed to lend upon usury, usury of money or usury of vehicles or usury of anything. And the penalty for usury or taking increase is the death penalty.
Right.
And the borrower is servant to the lender, as it says over in Proverbs. The whole system is against Yahweh's laws.
Right. And the, you know, so this is where we get back to, you have the hard assets and you have the paper assets. Or as you look at even in the paper assets, you have equity, which is called stock or ownership in the company. And then you have debt, which is called bonds, which is debt against the company that the company has to pay you. And in the event of a liquidation, which is like a foreclosure, but it's called a liquidation in business. In the debt of liquidation, the bonds get paid off first. The equity stockholders, they get paid off last, if there's anything there at all. So the whole thing with playing with the paper is bad. And the only reason I would ever tell anybody to, to get into paper is if your choice was to pay the IRS taxes, or to buy a life insurance policy, or to pay the IRS taxes, or to buy a type of annuity, certain types of annuity. a life insurance policy is the best paper product ever created. Ed Slott even calls it that it's the number one tax benefit in the entire tax code, cash value life insurance. But it has to be certain forms, and you need an agent who understands how to shift the death benefit around, increase the cash value, put proper riders on there so that the thing just never goes away, and you can get a reduced paid-up policy, worst-case scenario. And there's lots of different tricks of the trade. Most insurance agents out there, they go to get a license over a weekend, and then they start selling insurance. They have no idea what they're doing. I've been selling insurance since 1978, life and annuities, but only certain types, and most of them are designed for people with a lot of wealth. And I can show you how to make a life insurance policy your own personal bank so that you put money into it and you can take it out to buy things and you get tax deductions and you have a big death benefit. And Nelson Nash had created that system back in the 70s. It's called the infinite banking concept. And I learned from him personally. Great guy. He's just passed away a few years ago. He's in his 90s. And but there's all different types for people who have big businesses and stuff. You can get a type of policy called premium financing to where a bank pays the premium for you. You don't pay anything. And over time, you have a big death benefit and so forth. But for people who complain, oh, I don't want to put that much money. How about putting nothing in the policy? And you get a big death benefit because you have a good business or proper collateral or whatever that can justify the bank doing that and putting a high number on it. So there's all different sorts of things. Also, a lot of people have heard, like in real estate, a 1031 exchange to where you can exchange one piece of real estate for another, pretty much anything other than your own personal residence. You can only do it within the U.S. You couldn't exchange a piece of property in the U.S. for a piece of property in Canada, for instance. But hey, they have a thing called a 1035 exchange, which is another code in the IRS, and you can exchange a life insurance policy for another one in another country, or an annuity from America over to a Swiss annuity over there. Excuse me. And then when you get it over there, you can switch currencies if you want and different things. Excuse me. So there's ways to get your money out of the country and enjoy a lot of tax benefits, because to me, if I have a choice to buy almost anything rather than pay the IRS, I would do that. I stick pretty much in real estate, about 90%, and because real estate within itself is a tax benefit. You can write off your income against depreciation if you have a lot of money because you held on to a property and it went up in value. You can do a 1031 exchange. Any improvements you make to the property is a tax deduction. When you go to buy the property, if you use a broker or title company or title insurance, whatever, that's all a tax deduction. So the wealthy people in the country, they pay the politicians to make the laws so that they get to keep all their money. And it gets very complicated when you get way up there. But Jeff Bezos, who has Amazon made $10 billion last year, didn't pay a penny in taxes. Well, he maneuvers his money around and has top CPAs and tax attorneys so that he knows how to do that. They made a nice fee for moving that around, but he didn't have to pay any tax at all, and it's all legal. Go ahead.
I was going to say, what about when we come into a financial
crisis that's different than today. We've got in prophecies such as Revelation 18 and elsewhere that the Babylonian money system is going to fall. In fact, it says it's going to fall in one day there. What about preparing for those rough financial times?
Well, yeah, when it comes time because the whole thing, money, which is true gold and silver, they've changed that from money to a commodity. So every day, gold and silver goes up or down, depending on what the banks wanted to do and so forth. So Rothschild, he set the price of gold in London every day for over 200 years. So he knew before the next day if he was going to set it up or down, and he places bets, the gold's going to go up or down, and he knew because he was the one that was moving it. But the thing is, folks, you need hard assets. You need your property paid for. You need it out of the city, because Yahweh said he's going to destroy all the cities, not the towns or the villages, but all the big cities. I sit here in Oy Vegas, but I'm way at the edge of town, and I have places to go and so forth. But you have to have everything paid for. Don't keep any money in banks other than what you need to, pay some immediate bills or stuff. But where you put your investment money, you buy hard assets. You can buy silver all day long. You can go buy a silver coin at a coin shop for 15, 16 bucks right now. So you can start saving that way. Gold is a little more. You can exchange it, the silver for the gold. By the way, the ratios, normally it's supposed to be in the scripture 17 to 1. It would take 17 ounces of silver to buy 1 ounce of gold at 17 to 1. Well, right now the gold-silver ratio is at 82, 83, somewhere in there. I haven't checked it in the last few days. So gold is either way overpriced or silver is way underpriced. Either way you want, which one would you buy today? You would buy silver. It's the better buy. Now, eventually when gold comes down or silver goes up or both at the same time, when it gets to a ratio of about 20 to 1, I would exchange the silver for gold. And then eventually the gold will go back up, and then you keep buying the silver and so forth. So you can do little arbitrage things like that, and you can make some good money on it. Guns and ammo are going to be tremendous things to barter trade with. And that's why you need to have canned goods, MREs, meals ready to eat, type of things, long-term storage food, water purifiers that are gravity fed, not electrical, and different things like that. You need to be prepared for that, because figure one day all the paper assets are going to be zero. All fiat currency always returns to its original value, which is zero. It's really 2.5 cents for the paper, the ink, and the labor to make, and the machinery to make either a $1 bill or $100 bill. Doesn't matter. It's 2.5 cents. But it's going to go to zero. So you're even going to lose that 2.5 cents worth of value there.
Pardon me, Bob, but we have another caller from Rochester, New York.
Okay.
You're on the air.
Hello.
Yes, hello, Michael. Yes, hello, Michael. Hi. And I think your name is Bob. I just turned on the show, and I want to ask you, I'm looking at the concordance about usury. There's several verses here. Mm-hmm. I was talking to someone earlier tonight about this. I have two quick questions. First, it says that the lender should not use usury, but what about the person that buys a home today required to pay interest? Is that a violation of Yahweh's law if the buyer has to pay usury?
Yeah, you don't want to pay any interest. The Arabs actually have a system that they use today. We used to have a similar system before 1913. It was called municipal banking, and it works the same way the Arabs, La Riba and Hyundai and Halawa banking use today. And so So what they'll do is, let's say, whether you wanted to buy a house or you wanted to buy a business, the bank would tell you to put up 20%, let's say, or 30%, and then they would put up the difference, and you guys would be partners in the deal. And you would get paid, if it was a business, you would get paid a salary for being the farmer or the merchant or whatever. And as when the end of the year came, whatever profit was made, you would get your 20%, let's say, and the bank would get 80%. And now you have the ability to take 10 or 20% or nothing, and you can buy out equity from the bank. That's part of the deal. So if you paid, like, let's say 10%, and you had your other 10% profit plus your salary, in a matter of 8 years, you would pay off the bank, maybe sooner, because you'd be getting a bigger piece of the equity, and then get rid of the bank. The bank makes a little more upfront, but they do that with the interest anyway. All mortgages are front-loaded with interest, but it's done on a lease. Now, the good thing with the Arab system is, let's say you were a lousy farmer, a lousy merchant, and you couldn't turn a profit. They have the ability to fire you and get rid of you and put another merchant or farmer in there, but you don't lose your equity at all. And so you still have, at the end of the year, the ability to take your equity and continue to buy out the bank over time, but you lost your job, as it were, for that thing. What the banks do here, the Jew banks do here in America, is you could be down to you only have a couple of payments left, and they'll come in and foreclose and steal the whole property. So you have theft is a big thing with the Jew banks, where that's forbidden, interest is forbidden, and theft is forbidden with the Hyundai and Halawa banking, and their system is called Lariba, which means no interest.
There are these banks in America that you can do?
I think your question was about taking usury, which is against Yahweh's law, and I don't believe it's considered a sin to pay it, but you've got the verse that I mentioned earlier, the borrower is servant to the lender, and that Bob mentioned, owe no man anything, and what you do when you pay the interest is you're enslaving yourself.
Okay, now, Bob, what is the name of those banks again that do this, other system?
Their system is called Lariba, L-A-R-I-B-A, Lariba, that means no interest. And then their banking systems are called Hyundai, H-A-U-D-I, and Halawa, H-A-L-W-A. Don't quote me on the spelling, but it's close. Google will figure it out. And they're Arab banks. There's in California, there's an Arab bank there, and it's called the Bank of Whittier. And they operate on that whole system in Whittier, California.
Okay, I got one more quick question. I understand this. You have these Jewish, they're not really banks, the loaning companies that could lend you money without interest. And one of them one time spoke to someone in California and said, it didn't matter what your religion is. Do you know anything about that, Bob?
Do not.
Yeah, they have these Jewish loaning institutions around the country. And they'll lend money for with no interest. Not in New York here. They told me you can't do it. But ones in California said it didn't matter what religion you were.
What would be their incentive to loan money?
I don't know. When I was thinking of moving out to California one year, I called first to ask about it. And they said, it doesn't matter. We'll send you the application. No interest. So if you don't know about it, Bob, you might want to look into it. Over here, I had an argument with a lady here in Buffalo, New York, about it. There was a Jewish loan institution there. And they said, I said, well, if I'm an Israelite, would I be qualified? He says, it doesn't matter if you're an Israelite. You have to be a member of the synagogue. So that's, you see what they're doing.
Sure. They might have their own in-house type thing with a charity, and they have to do certain things. For instance, a foundation like the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Under that foundation chapter, 5% of the assets that they have for the in the foundation, they have to give away every year or they pay a heavy penalty. It might be something like that for all I know. You know, there's a lot of ways, you know, that you can do things. If you're going to loan, you know, obviously if you loan the family member some money, you didn't charge him interest, he pays you back, you know, everything's fine and dandy and you helped him out. But as far as loaning it to a stranger or to anyone else, that you would have to have some sort of incentive, you know, I would think. I don't know about that system. The Arabs, they do it so that it's a partnership type deal. And then, like on a car or something, they wouldn't be partners with you in the car, but they would, give you a lease. So you would pay like a rent on, you put 20% down and they'd pay the 80%, but you'd pay them off as a lease until you paid the car off. So they get the rent plus eventually, you'd have to pay off the whole debt. But they don't charge interest at all on the thing.
One more question about the MA, please. Say, for instance, you want to get this house and you can't come up with the 20% and you got to do the usury. Can you possibly contact the owner of the house and work out something privately with the owner that you didn't have to pay usury, but made some kind of arrangement where he could make up for that, that you're not paying usury with the owner of the property itself, the house you want to buy, instead of going through the banking institution?
Yeah, there's a lot of things like that done, like on farms and ranches, where you exchange labor, you know, on the farm or the ranch, you know, and then you work off with the labor rather than giving him cash, and you work off paying off the land and so forth.
Hey, thank you very much, Bob, and nice meeting you, and good night, Michael. Thank you.
Good night. Thank you for calling. I think that we also need to emphasize the priorities in a person's life. And it says the love of money is the root of all evil. People are familiar with that verse. And we're told over in Proverbs, labor not to be rich, cease from thy own wisdom. We're told also in Proverbs that wealth gotten from vanity will be diminished, and that he that gathereth by labor shall increase. So there are certain principles and priorities that we need to place in our lives.
Sure. Yeah, it's, you know, money, two of the big gurus out there, as it were, Dave Ramsey and Robert Kiyosaki, they're both smart guys. Dave Ramsey, he's a white Christian guy. He buys all of his real estate for cash. He has 70% of his wealth in the real estate, but then he turns around and he takes 30% and he puts it in mutual funds, which is a gambling game. You know, and when it comes to gold and silver, he doesn't believe in it, doesn't want to deal with it, and turns everybody off to it. But when somebody talks about life insurance or annuities, he turns that off. He'll talk about term life as something you should get. You know, that's his posture. So he's about half right and half wrong. Kiyosaki, on the other hand, he's a big real estate guy. He doesn't buy stock, but he'll set up a company and then take the company public, and then you're issued a bunch of stock. And that's basically a license to steal. Once you get stock from a company that you started, because you can get news stories out there, and if it's real positive, people buy the stock, and so you're selling it. And when you got a lot of money and you want to buy the stock cheaper, you put an ad out in the paper that the company's having problems, people sell the stock, it goes down, and you're buying it up at the bottom. And that's what all the big guys do, and have been doing it for hundreds of years. Kiyosaki, he does believe in gold and silver as true money and so forth. In fact, he says you have to invest in the four precious metal, gold, silver, guns, and ammo. I like that. His real estate, though, some of what he gets into is what's called non-recourse loan, which that's kind of an interesting thing, where you might have an apartment building, let's say it's worth $2 million, you put $1 million down, and you borrow $1 million from the bank, but it's non-recourse. In other words, if you default, the bank can't come after you at all. They can only go after the property. And so he does a lot of stuff like that.
I hate to interrupt you, Bob, but we're at the end of the broadcast. Would you like to give out some contact information and some in case somebody would like to get in touch with you?
Sure. If you have, I do radio shows on a fairly regular basis. My email address is twoseedlinemessage. That's twoseedlinemessage, all one word, twoseedlinemessage@yahoo.com. And you can always reach me also through Mike, because I'm a trustee on the Kingdom Identity Ministries there.
Well, I'd like to thank you for being on the broadcast tonight. Our address and contact information will be given here in a minute. But we do have a comic book called The Temple of Imaginary Money that explains usury and in an easy-to-understand way, plus a book by Compre on the Babylon's Money, which was last week's broadcast. And I might mention, in addition to ammunition and survival supplies, etc., I think you should have a Bible in your pack. I consider that part of the survival supplies, and we do have a very nice large print compact Bible that's available. But we're just out of time, so I'd like to thank Bob again and thank our listeners for tuning in. May Yahweh bless you.
We pray that your spiritual ears have received today's message and that you are fed with strong meat relevant to solving the needs of our nation and Christian civilization everywhere. Herald of Truth is sponsored by Kingdom Identity Ministries through the financial support and prayers of listeners like you who love the truth of God's Word and want to see it broadcast throughout the land to awaken His people. If you would like a
CD
of today's message, tell us the date and station to which you are listening and send a donation to cover our cost plus help with radio time to Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas, 72602. We would appreciate donations made by our international listeners to be in U.S. funds. For a free introductory packet of information, including our doctrinal statement of beliefs, plus lists of books and tapes to aid you in your study of biblical truth, write Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas, 72602, USA. Or request this material by calling 870-741-1119. That's 870-741-1119. Visit our internet website by going to www.kingidentity.com. Type www.kingidentity.com. We invite you to listen regularly to Herald of Truth broadcast for more dynamic messages proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom at this same time and station.